You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our words of wisdom are from Proverbs chapter 17, verse 22, Job chapter 8, verse 21, and Psalm 126, verse 2.
From Proverbs, a joy-filled heart is curative balm, but a broken spirit hurts all the way to the bone.
From Job, he will fill your mouth with laughter. Your lips will spill over into cries of delight.
From Psalms, our mouths were filled with laughter. Our tongues were spilling over into song. The word went out across the prairies and the deserts, across the hills, over the oceans wide, from nation to nation. The Eternal has done remarkable things for them.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
It's been a long week for all of us. And for me, I've attempted to pull from sermons from 50 years ago. For those that are not aware, I was a pastor for a while in Texas. And I was looking through my small box of 148 sermons, a shoebox. Used to preach out of 3x5 cards. It's like very, very different now. I write them out a little more thoroughly. But I had no luck. I've changed quite a bit since then from a traditional UMC pastor, preacher, to a progressive, from a Wesleyan follower to a Jesus follower. So when I first said I was willing to leave early at our annual conference early, I wasn't that far away in Sun City, and bring the message this week, I had planned on using, and Donna can attest to this, because a month and a half ago I said, oh, well, the sermon's going to be The Gospel According to Peanuts. Yes. This is a book that was written by Robert Short in 1964, first published. And I started rereading the text from that book. Yeah. And soon found it was not what I remembered. Early on, I was using the sermon title, Gospel According to Peanuts. As I went through my sermon box, or my list, really, I realized what Short was attempting to say was not going to fit with who I am today, and nor this congregation of Jesus followers. Thus, the new and improved comic strip theology, available at your local Bible store soon, or not, haven't written it yet. In my research, I found a series of books called the Word for Word Bible Comic that you can find on YouTube. And it's designed for teens and adult readers, but it's literally comics, thus the comic theology. But that still wasn't what I was looking for. I kept looking for comic or comedy and the connection to the religious life, and came across a great article by Griffin, and I hope I'm saying his name right, Gooch, G-O-O-C-H. It was published a year ago on June 11th, called Why Theology Needs Comedy. His thesis is, even though theology and comedy are often painted as incompatible, they're not. While theological spaces have earned a reputation as notoriously incompatible, notoriously unfunny, this reputation was born out of historical and cultural influence rather than universal theological truisms. Gooch goes on to say, if we don't make room in our theology for comedy, our theology gets stale. I'm quoting him, this applies to academia, churches, and our dating life. I can confirm the last term. Pam loves to laugh at me. Laugh with me. Some of you know Pam, yeah. In Speaking Theology and Comedy, Goetsch mentions a psychologist, George Holcomb, who ran an experiment to hear what humorous responses people would produce to some hypothetical situations. Holcomb found that religious fundamentalists performed worst of any demographic. I think we can all agree on that. Apparently, quote, apparently our religious beliefs, whether you're an evangelical, an atheist, or doing the Tom Cruise thing, have a direct correlation on our sense of humor. G.K. Chesterton in Lunacy and Letters said, life is serious all the time, but living cannot be. You may have all the solemnity you wish in choosing your neckties, but in anything else such as death, sex, and religion, you must have laughter or you will have madness. In The Humor of Christ, D. Elton Trueblood wrote, the widespread failure to recognize and to appreciate the humor of Christ is one of the most amazing aspects of the era named after him. Anyone who reads the Synoptic Gospels with relative freedom from presuppositions might be expected to see that Christ laughed and that he expected others to laugh. But our capacity to miss this aspect of his life is phenomenal. The Genesis story of Sarah and Abraham, and I intentionally changed the order of those names, speaks of Yahweh telling them they are going to have a child. Well, in Genesis 18:12, Sarah laughed. When she finally bears a child, she laughs again. The first laugh out of cynicism, for she was older adult. First laugh is out of cynicism because of broken dreams of motherhood. And the second laugh was out of wonder that God was even capable of bringing about such kindness. And theologian Jorgen Moltmann, who Daniel Silliman called the theologian of hope, wrote, God weeps with us so we may one day laugh with him. So I say all of this to bear with you as I offer comics from the 70s, pulled out of that same shoebox, and some theological perspectives. I asked several of you, who was your favorite comic strip character or comic strip growing up? Well, back when the comics were in color in the Sunday morning newspaper. How many of you remember that? Yeah, a lot of you. And I used to call the comic page my theology page. So here goes. As I mentioned in reviewing my sermons, I realized I have changed. One of those changes involves my understanding of being a follower versus a believer. It has to do with an understanding of the life of Jesus versus what became of the story of Jesus and how it changed from 60 CE to 300 CE. And today I think many will profess without knowing for sure what they are professing. So here we go with Lucy and Charlie Brown during baseball season. Lucy says, next year I'm going to be a free agent. Do you know what a free agent is? No, but I'm going to be one anyway. That's where you can laugh. Because that's peanuts. How many times have we been asked why we're Christians? Probably not many, but because most people think they know what a Christian is. I was part of a statewide, just take a moment here, this is a side note, I was part of a statewide initiative called Math Renaissance K-12 while in California. One of our resources was a short film where they interviewed interviews called Private Universe. High school students and Harvard University grad students, obviously in Massachusetts, were asked to define or explain some science terms. To explain the seasons, even the university grads said summer was when the Earth was closer to the sun. Not true. Otherwise, we would have summer differently than in the... Yeah, anyway. A high school student had a strange explanation of the phases of the moon. Even after being given the correct science, she had a hard time giving up her private universe. And this is where I come back. You see, most people have an ingrained picture of what it means to be a Christian. Some go so far as to question the Pope. We won't say who that was. Father Leo. So Lucy goes on and wants to be a free agent, whatever that is. Some hold on to the law and prophets, the rules of the game, not knowing what the game really is about, or perhaps even the rules, that the rules are the game. Beetle Bailey from a while ago asks, "Can I borrow some toothpaste, Julius?" "Well, all right. But when you squeeze it, don't let your brush touch the tube, and don't let it lose the cap, and recap it immediately, and don't put globs and globs of... It's very rude to leave in mid-sentence, and don't come crying to me when your teeth fall out and you don't ever..." How many of us have had the experience of hearing that the rules are more important than the actual action? That to be a member of a congregation, to be a member of a community, you have to follow so many rules. In Matthew 22 and Mark 12 and Luke 20, the Pharisees and the Herodians either came to Jesus or sent spies in their stead to question him about the law. Later in these same chapters, the Sadducees asked about the law concerning the wife of a deceased man and if the brother-in-law should marry her, as per the laws. Again, a lawyer or a scribe asks one last question. In Matthew and Mark, the question is, which is the greatest commandment of the law? In Luke, the lawyer asks what he should do to inherit eternal life. The simple answer to each of those is God, love God, and second, to love yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. Let's take a short detour from small society. The gentleman says, "So what if we lose the First Amendment? We'll still have a couple dozen other amendments left." I'm not going to get into that politics. In theological terms, some people look at the law and the prophets as a list to rewrite or to drop or to rebrand or to interpret to benefit themselves or their families. I'm not calling names here. So Jesus makes it clear we really don't need a lot of rules. We need to follow the two commandments. Or as we profess at the fountains, we put love first. "Sir, the kid behind me keeps calling me names. Point him out to me when we get to Camp Marcy and I'll shorten his lifespan." "Oh, that's okay, sir. I already hit him." "Well, maybe he's hurt. Do you have a first aid kit?" "Well, that's what I hit him with." So bringing that to the theological terms, some people see the Bible as a first aid kit for our daily lives. Pepper Mint Patty is a Gemini, like a few of us in the room. She first wants to shorten the person's lifespan, but then she wonders if the person is hurt. I see the Bible in this strip as a first aid kit, a source of relief upon injury or disappointment, sorrow or doubt. Marcy, like so many Christians, in quotes, uses the kit as a weapon, not as a bomb. If we're followers of Jesus, we become the kit in the form of offering hope to those who worry, solace to those who in suffering, food for those who are hungry. All too often, we are a bit self-centered or self-righteous. We judge the cover instead of the book. Can you see that in Church Chuckles? It's a little small print. There's a sign saying new members and a pastor with his hand on the shoulder of a couple that seem to be new members. And a woman behind the pastor whispers to him, check their background. He's got beady eyes, and I'll bet she's wearing a wig. Yeah. Jesus was not asked which is the greatest of these, Hindu, Muslim, Jew, native people, spirit world. So where does this come from? We're human. We seem to have a need to be right. Politicians and some fundamentalist groups find it necessary to insist on being the only right way to govern or worship. Others, myself included, feel it is necessary to see the divine as much, much larger than any one approach to the unknown. Henry Rousseau, many, many, many years ago, once said, God created man in his own image, and man, being a gentleman, returned the favor. So the scriptures we quote come from our own need to justify beliefs we already hold as a projection of our innermost thoughts, or I should say, do they? Michael Jackson sang, "The Man in the Mirror." Think of that for a second. Paul's first letter to the Corinthians suggests another way to look at this thought. From the Voice translation, this 1 Corinthians 13, verse 12, "For now we can only see a dim and blurry picture of things, as when we stare into polished metal. I realize that everything I know is only part of the big picture." One more comic. Again, this is Hagar the Horrible from July 31st, 1979. This one I have a date on. And Hagar says, probably a religious argument. We've got a gentleman with a sign that says, "Love thy neighbor," hitting a guy who says the end is near. Hopefully we don't carry either one of those signs and use it as a bludgeon. In John 14, written some 70 to 100 years after Jesus, the author quotes Jesus as saying, "In his Father's house there are many mansions." Again, back to the Hinduism, the Buddhist, the shaman. I offer this. Another one of my favorites. This is from Red Eye, back in July of 1979, I think, again. The horse comes walking up and sees the chickens at the water with their heads facing upward. So he starts looking up, wondering what they might be looking at, and one of the chickens says to the other, "I didn't know horses had to tilt their heads back like we do to swallow." So sometimes we think that that someone else might have the answer, and so we have to try to follow them, and without realizing, maybe they are just trying to swallow. The water, in this case, is the spirit. And the horse is confused. He looks to where he thinks the birds are looking, but in reality, they're just drinking in the water of life, and the horse is missing the point. Another look, we all approach God in our own way. Some look up, some look down, the same spirit, but approached from many different angles. I'm reminded of the joke about a person being given the tour of heaven by Peter. Don't have it written, and a few of you have probably heard me say this again. So a person is being led around, and Peter says, "Well, this is one of the first mansions, and they're very quiet inside, and doesn't seem to be much going on." And he asks, "Well, who are they?" "Well, these are the Quakers." And they go down a little further, and there's all sorts of loud noise and people raising their hands and shouting in languages that are not clear. And he said, "Well, who are these?" "Well, these are the Pentecostals." And goes down a little further and goes in. "Well, what are these? These people are all eating together and sharing a meal." And, "Well, who are they?" "Well, those are the Methodists." And goes down a little further, and you can change the name anytime you want. "You have to be really quiet." "Why?" "Well, they're the Baptists. They think they're the only ones here." And you can fill in whatever group you want in that. If we are truly to be followers of Jesus rather than believers in, we must open ourselves to a world in which the spirit of truth, justice, compassion, and inclusivity reign. And I offer these two closing thoughts. From Abundant Lives by Amanda Yudis Kessler, on page 2, she says in her introduction, "Our world is full of pain and joy, violence and creativity, cruelty and kindness. How should we live? What should our actions be? We make decisions about who to be and who and what to do minute by minute, life day by day, lifetime by lifetime. What wisdom, what hope, what courage should guide those decisions? How shall we respond to the good we encounter, to the evil? These are ethical, moral questions, some of the most important questions we can ask, given the unspeakable good and the terrifying evil around us, and of which we ourselves are capable." And a nursery rhyme that I remember, and I may even be able to say it. "A man of words and not of deeds is like a garden full of weeds. And when the weeds begin to grow, it's like a garden full of snow. And when the snow begins to fall, it's like a bird upon the wall. And when the bird away does fly, it's like an eagle in the sky. And when the sky begins to roar, it's like a lion at the door. And when the door begins to crack, it's like a stick across your back. And when your back begins to smart, it's like a penknife in your heart. And when your heart begins to bleed, you're dead and dead and dead indeed." Are we a people of words and deeds, or just words without deeds? Are we Jesus followers or just believers? Followers of Jesus or believers in? And one final comment. Take a look at these creatures, a platypus, an aardvark, Creator God, has a sense of humor. Thank you. Amen.
Hey, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.